Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another hour of Tech Talk. It is me, Stephen Scott, back with you here again. Lovely to be with you. I'm joined by my guests as always. I say guests, they are friends, at least on Facebook and on Twitter. Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet, are you my friend in real life?
I don't know if a real friend would have told you before now that it is I was actually incorrect, but you got it right. What a snobby, sorry.
Sorry, did I get it wrong?
You said it is me today, and that's right.
Oh, I thought it was it is I.
No, because if you take again. Basically, if you like say he and I or something, if you then take the other person out of the sentence and it's just you left behind, then would you say I went to town or would you say me went to town? So that's how you can tell. So it is me. There's only one of you. Andy and me. That sort of thing.
And welcome to Learning English with Robin Christofferson, a brand new podcast here. Hope you're enjoying it. Yes.
I am a friend. Honest.
You know, the old days you would say you could hear the radios turning off. I don't know what the equivalent of tapping screens on the get lost button on the app. Yeah, I don't know. Tim Schwartz
people
is here.
People relentlessly shouting stop at the records.
Exactly. We've got Tim Schwartz from lifeafterblindness.com. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, former co-host Robin, probably, maybe after that one. I don't know.
Yeah, the questions after this.
But you guys are my friends, I think. Who else, Stephen, would spend how many hours with you on the phone working on computer issues and things and such till the wee hours? We have been known to do that a couple times. So yes, I am here for you. Therefore, I'm your friend.
And what about WhatsApp and endless groups that we're on and sitting there talking?
Yeah. WhatsApp, talking. Clubhouse, and you know, just audio FaceTime. And yes, that I mentioned Clubhouse.
Clubhouse is a whole lot of fun. No prizes
you and I take
to be
over.
Won.
Yes.
If you have to be a certain age to get that one. And Andy Winners here emails Andy. Hello.
Me is here. I is happy to be me with you here today. Hello.
I don't get any of that. Well, okay. And we are. You had another voice there, and you're thinking, who's that? Who is this other voice? Well, let me introduce him. He is Callum Stoneman. I like that name. Callum Stoneman.
Hello.
Would you care to call you the Stoneman? That's quite cool.
The Stone Man, yeah.
The Stone Man. Right, that's it. You've got no, because you see, we've got all these listeners who get in touch with us with their, you know, like I am King George the Fourth or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, all our titles, yeah.
Yeah, so you're the Stone Man.
The Stone Man, yeah. That, I mean, I'm not made of stone.
Does that mean you work in the gardens?
I mean,
I don't
know. What does that mean?
I know.
What does that even mean?
I don't know what I'm talking about. It's a tech show, guys. I don't talk about anything else. I don't know nothing.
Wonder why people misunderstand you sometimes, Stephen.
Exactly. Why do people misunderstand me so much in my life? Anyway, Callum, welcome to the show. You're joining us this week to talk tech, chew the fat, and all that stuff. And yeah, let's dive in with you then, because why are you here, Callum? What's going on? Well, I should say, you contacted us on email to say, hey, look, I'd like to get involved in the show. I bet you wish you hadn't now.
You know those shows where you think what you hear on air is different? I've just spent about 15 minutes with you off air, and it's really not.
It's, no, we are not.
It's just as brilliant.
I've told people this recently. What you hear on air is just a purposefully cleaned up version of us for the radio.
That's so true.
All it is. It's still us just trying to be cleaner because we have to be.
I know.
Yeah, because it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's so funny, right? Callum, you are the listener's... you're getting the listener perspective today, right? Because, like you say, you came on and I started ranting about something, as usual. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we probably should start the show. So, yeah, that's generally how this works. The show happens in between our conversation. That's how it works here. We don't know how, but it just seems to work. But look, tell me about you. What's your background? What have you been doing? What have you done with your life, Callum?
So, I've had quite a long background in tech, really. I've always had an interest in it. I think I got a first computer when I was about 8 or 9, unbelievably using the old Windows Narrator on XP for a while.
Okay.
I don't know how I managed that.
Hang on. So, what age are you?
21.
Oh, you're so young. I'm so young. 21. So, what was your first computer?
Do you know what? I don't even know. It was one that my granddad, because my granddad was a techie as well, and I don't know where he dug it out from, but he just found this screen reader on there called Narrator, and it started talking to him. And he said, "Oh, hang on, I think you might be able to use this." And so we've got Narrator, then we got Thunder, which is kind of NVDA, the NVDA before.
Yeah, it was NVDA, NVDA wasn't it? That's popular. What it became, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. And that was, I don't know how many times I broke that computer, but, you know, that's how you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I am an Apple fan. So, sorry to those people who say we're biased.
That's all right. You're among friends here. It's fine.
Although I do have an Android phone for work, so I'm halfway there. So,
okay. And you use Braille, don't you? You're a Braille.
I do. Yeah. So I've got a Braille Note Touch Plus as well, which I use for work. I don't use it all the time, but I do like it. I do like the convenience. It's especially nice when you're on, at the minute, you're obviously working from home and stuff. When you're on calls, it is so nice to be able to shut the speech up and just read stuff.
Well, this is as you know, as you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that we've been having this conversation so many times. You know, for me personally, it's always been about, learning Braille has been about that. Not really sitting down reading a book. As much as I'd love to, I really would love to take a book, a physical book off the shelves that's in Braille and read it. I don't think that's realistic just because of the speed. It would take me forever. And, you know, I've got to say, my book reading skills are not the best anyway. When it comes to
your
audiobooks.
Your book reading desires are not the best. What are you talking about?
It's, no, it's just that I fall asleep. That's the problem. I absolutely love how many audiobooks there are. And I love that they're available, but I just fall asleep after the first 10 minutes. And I say, forget it.
I mean,
you better with Braille.
I don't have the patience for Braille books. It's too, I mean, fair play to those people who read physical Braille books, and fair play to those people who read them on Braille displays as well. Mm. I know some people who do that, and I can just about get some work done using my Braille display on like an hour long Teams call or whatever, but reading a book, nah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. You've got a really interesting background in this, and I know you were keen to get involved with the show, and that's one of the reasons why I was really glad you wanted to get involved, because we don't have, Robin and I have danced around Braille for a while. We've had that argument often enough with our listeners about, you know, what we do in terms of Braille, and, you know, I think I'm further up the line than he is, if I'm honest. Sorry, Robin.
I do. I'm still waiting for mine to completely dry out after the tea.
Oh, still? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, erring on the same side.
You get a Braille display sent to you. The lovely people at AbilityNet send you a Braille display. Granted, it was lying covered in dust in a cupboard. But they sent it to you. And in fact, actually, they did. They hand-delivered it to you, did they not?
Yeah.
And you covered it in tea.
It's because I value it so much that I'm waiting for a very long time just to be 100% sure. Before I turn it on again.
Yeah, just to be sure on that. It's interesting, Callum, because there are lots of conversations we're going to have this week, and I'll be intrigued in your view on this. I want to start, if we can, and just this is around the table for everyone, on Clubhouse, because Clubhouse has been in the blind world's conversation, it seems, for a bit of a time. It's really interesting with Clubhouse, because it started off as an app that everybody seemed to be against in the blind community and the wider disabled community. And I'll get to the reasons there in a second, because there are very valid reasons why I can see a lot of disabled people concerned about this app and worried about it. But when it comes to blind people, there was a bit of, you know, it wasn't exactly the most friendly response to the app, but that was because it was very inaccessible. And then there was an incident which happened where a group of blind people were on Clubhouse talking about inaccessibility of the app. And apparently, the story goes that someone from the app development side of the business had sort of wandered in to this room and listened to the conversation and immediately said, look, I'm going to action this. I'm going to do something here. And it was a really positive conversation, actually, because the conversation was around the specific issues that the app had in terms of accessibility issues, that, you know, wasn't working with VoiceOver, things that weren't working properly. It wasn't a let's hate on this. It was a, actually, do you know what? There's genuine issues here. If this was fixed, this would be better. The app developer actually took that on board and made changes, and suddenly the app is now accessible. And I think we need to shout out the 15% group, as they're called in Clubhouse. That seems to be the group that managed to make it happen, which is absolutely fantastic. So well done to them.
Yeah, they've been working really hard at trying to partner with the developers to make this happen. And February 8th was the first major update, I'd say, for Clubhouse accessibility. And then just this last week, boy, they went a big step further. Now, is there the occasional maybe, you know, a button here that could be better labeled, or for my personal taste, a couple headings they could implement that would make it easier to navigate with VoiceOver? Sure, but we're picking nits at this point. I mean, it went from 85-ish or 90% accessible to 98% accessible, probably. Is that fair? I mean, it's so easy to use now.
It is, and it's a lot of improvements have been made, and you know that update you're talking about that just came in. What, Robin? This week that came in. It was version 3.0.
Yeah, 1.30. 3 or 4 days ago, and it really has made a big difference, because one of the real sticking spots was actually so step back for people that aren't aware. Clubhouse, you have to get an invite. It's only on iPhone at the moment, but when you're in there, there's an almost infinite number of clubs and rooms in those clubs popping open all the time that you can just join with a tap. And you're in, like you say, a discussion about, I don't know, blind podcasting or the accessibility of this particular app or whatever it might be, or, you know, might get rich quick schemes or whatever. And you can listen in. If you then get invited up to on the stage to speak, then you need to do that by tapping on raise your hand, which is accessible, always has been. But then when they kind of invite you to come up as a speaker, that has been really challenging. So that was quite a significant feature that was really challenging.
Yeah, because the pop-up that would come up at the top of the screen wasn't accessible. You couldn't grab focus with VoiceOver, so you had to wait. You have to go into your own profile. Well, not the profile, but you'd have to choose your name on the room, and then you would be able to go in and choose yourself and accept the speaking invitation. And that's all been fixed, thankfully. But you know, there's still a few issues. It's not perfect, and I know people who are using it will say that, and I always like to caveat that. I just want to give a bit of a wider perspective, though, on Clubhouse. You know, again, another social app, this time audio-based, and that for a lot of reasons has angered some in the disabled community, especially those who are deaf-blind as well, people who need the ability to get captions or be able to output information in another way. And I don't know if it's I don't think it's necessarily appropriate that we have this discussion, unless someone wants to jump in on it, but I don't think it's appropriate for us to have a say on that unless we feel we want to. I just accept to say that is a concern. My take on that to some degree would be that, you know, it's not the only app out there. And, you know, there are a lot of work is being done on a number of different apps to make them more accessible to more people. Whether or not this app should be more accessible, as in, you know, it should be visual or have captioning going alongside the actual speech, I don't know. I'd be interested in people's thoughts on that, because ultimately it sells itself as an app for audio communication. And I think it does open up a very interesting discussion about apps like this. You know, can they even offer themselves up as a platform for promoting diversity if they exclude people in the community?
That being said, though, in either the last town hall that they did, because they do one every Sunday with the developers of the app and people behind the scenes, and they talk about their updates and things that have been going on, and then they do a Q&A. And I don't remember if it was this last one or a couple times ago, they did mention that they've been doing research into this very topic about captioning or even transcripts after the fact. They understand the difference. They understand why that is a desired thing. From what I've understood, there are people who are deaf or deafblind that have been having relay services come in and help them to tell them what's being said. So there are ways around it, sort of, if you do that. But they actually have acknowledged publicly, out loud, we understand that captioning is a thing. We understand that that's something that's a desire. And we're looking into the possibility of how we would be able to implement that. So the fact that they at least acknowledge it and say, we hear you and we're looking into it, we're trying. Usually a company saying that, you'd be like, oh, they're just trying to pacify us. But you know what? No, each of the last, you know, two major updates, they've done stuff for voiceover. So for the moment, I'm going to give them credit and I will believe them that they're looking into it because of what they've done for us for voiceover. Should it have it? I mean, YouTube has the ability to have closed captions, but you as a creator have to turn it on and it tries to do it. It doesn't always get all the words right because it's trying to do it automatically, but you have to turn it on. It's not automatic on every channel. So, you know, for them to even be looking into it at all is better than some companies.
Zoom have also announced that they're going to be providing live captions.
Yes, that's right.
So that's, you know, I don't know when that's going to be coming to a Zoom client near us, but, you know, that I think will to some extent get over it. And certainly if these events are going to be relatively high profile, whether it's a Zoom webinar or whether it's a particular event in Clubhouse, then like Tim says, you know, you can get, if as long as these the ability to provide captions, then you could, you know, get a live captioner. Rev.com is a brilliant service that can do that really, really well, very affordably. So, you know, that they could kind of do the Rolls-Royce solution there. But I don't think you can blame Clubhouse for being an audio-based platform and thus inherently, you know, being inaccessible for a particular group when, you know, that's the nature of audio. And they should, you know, take those steps to make it as inclusive as possible. But, you know, my family are often playing online games that are inherently visual, or maybe they're to do with drawing or whatever it might be, that, you know, I'm never going to get access to those. I know that's on a completely different scale, but you shouldn't say that people shouldn't create, you know, something like Scribblio because, you know, a blind person's never going to be able to use it. I don't think they should be denigrated for making this choice of platform. I think they're very active at the moment. I mean, then, every single week they have a session for blind users to walk them through how to use the app in a club room. So they're really, really committed. And
but what I would say is, I accept that view, and I think most people would. But I also think if we don't stand up to certain things. You know, so what do we stand up to? This is the challenge, isn't it? It's that where does the line in terms of activism? Because do we go so far to say, well, this app should implement video in order for it to be more accessible? For example, I mean, and a good example of this, not through activism actually, but through their own development. And I don't know the reasons behind. Maybe there was activism behind it. I don't know. But you know, I think about the Echo Dot and the Google Home to some degree as well. These were audio platforms. And in order to make their app and their service accessible to everyone, they developed an Echo with a screen. So,
and I think that's, you know, exactly the process that Clubhouse are undergoing. So, you know, you can't say that Amazon were wrong to create an audio-only platform in the first instances. And, you know, it took a while for the other ones to come along, but you can definitely tell that they've been prioritizing accessibility very significantly. And yeah, I think it's a watch this space.
What I would say though is it does sound to me as if, and it's interesting, I feel I've been schooled in this a little bit recently, but I just feel it is really important that we make sure that we stand up for as many disabilities and as many people as possible. Of course, that's our roles. And if we are in a position of, you know, in our case, we're talking to public, we're, you know, we're putting ourselves out there. It's really important that, you know, we say what sometimes needs to be said in this space. We shouldn't kowtow or be held back in our feelings on this. I feel that if something is saying it's accessible, and Clubhouse aren't, I mean, just to be clear, Clubhouse have never said this is an app for blind people or deaf people or for anybody. It's for anybody who wants to use it, right? And obviously, you know, we're pinning this on them slightly. It's not on them, but it does bring up an interesting and much wider conversation around what we should be focusing on as a community, and what the results of that can be. And I think, you know, I look at the Amazon Echo as a good example of that, where something became fully accessible to more people. And that's important, because as much as, yeah, okay, that game isn't accessible to you, so and maybe we shouldn't be bothered by it, equally, maybe we should, because we're missing out on something else. So is out of that, maybe not that that itself becomes accessible, but something else does that you can engage in. I guess what I'm saying is activism is important, right? But it's we need to know how to start. We need to know how to do it. We need to talk to the right people. And we can't force it on people, but we have to make sure that they understand it. And I think in some ways that's what Clubhouse, the people at Clubhouse have actually done. They've been listening. And they've been listening to people's concerns, especially around blindness, and making the app accessible. And it's worked. It was a positive conversation that led to some good change. And, you know, I hope that if other people in other communities, other parts of the, you know, disability spectrum, if you like, if people feel that that's something that needs to be brought up, that it is done so. So, but I think as an app, it's an absolute rabbit warren. I mean, it's full of so many rooms and conversations going on of all kinds of get-rich-quick schemes, which there seems to be an abundance of.
Cryptocurrency, get-rich-quick. Yes. Interview with celebrities. There's been a lot of people popping in, you know, from Bill Gates to, you know, former employees of Apple to actor Malcolm McDowell, that you apparently have no idea who he is, even though he's British, but that's a whole other conversation. I'm sure the listeners know who he
just
is.
Just because he's British doesn't mean I know who he is. I don't know who everybody is.
I know that. I did not say that or imply that. Just saying. Anyway.
That brings up a good point about there being a lot of get-rich-quick schemes in there. Then that brings up the issue of moderation, which is also something that Twitter are having trouble with their new, well, not so much new, but their version of it, the Twitter Spaces, is that they're holding back on the launch because they want to get safety right in order for people to feel comfortable in these sort of spaces.
Yeah, because social media is really on it when it comes to safety.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's always been the place for safety. I have to
say,
right, so I was off work last week. We did have Tech Talk last week, in case you think, well, hang on, you did Tech Talk, so you must have, we recorded it beforehand, before I went away. But one thing I did last week, I finally got around to watching a documentary I've been wanting to watch but been terrified to watch, called The Social Dilemma on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And
I want to watch this.
Well, I was going to bring you in this, Callum, because, you know, I wanted to get your views on Clubhouse in a minute as well, but I also think what an amazing documentary if you want to scare yourself away from never using social media again. It is terrifying. Yeah, I did. I watched it through my fingers. I was just like, oh, I can't believe it. I mean, you have to. If you haven't watched it, you have to. You just have to, because it is. You know this stuff intrinsically. You know it's true, but you just don't believe that really it does happen. You know, you kind of sense that maybe it's just a little bit overblown. In some ways, it's worse. But you know, look, watch the documentary. It's very interesting. Callum, your thoughts on Clubhouse? Have you tried it?
Do you know what? It's a trend that I haven't actually caught onto yet. But it does sound interesting. I mean, I've done similar. I've been on a few sort of like team talk servers before, but obviously Clubhouse is more your full. It's like a huge conference, isn't it? Rather than just jumping on.
It would be like going to a convention or a conference that has thousands of rooms with different speakers or different conversations in every single room, and you can just walk up and down and just peek in and peek out and stay if you like, and either be two or three friends talking to literally, you know, 7,000 or 8,000 people listening to a presentation and everything in between. So yeah, that's probably a really good comparison.
Yeah, it does sound really good. There's a few. I mean, I know there has been a few privacy concerns, haven't there, about having you've got to give it access to your contacts in order to send invites and stuff. But the beautiful, and it goes back to this social dilemma as well. The beautiful bit of irony that I like is that people are complaining about Clubhouse privacy on Facebook, which is probably the worst social media.
Right?
If you're on Facebook, you shouldn't be worried about privacy, really, should you? The world knows everything about you from Facebook.
I was talking to somebody in a completely different app, and they had said, oh, I heard on Twitter about these privacy concerns over Clubhouse. And I'm like, and you're concerned about this? We're like, well, yeah, I'm not going to do this because I went to sign up, and they asked me for my contacts, and I knew that they would have that information. And so I just deleted the app. But I'm like, and yet you're still on Twitter.
Well, okay. Well, to be fair, I moan about WhatsApp, but I'm still on it. I don't like the fact that you have to give your number out to everyone.
Yeah, I don't
to join
like it either,
WhatsApp
but, but I'm still there.
Yeah, but it's still it's a good app. So
but you know what?
Nice,
we're all hypocrites in this, aren't we? But I mean, I've got a friend who did this. He was like, you know, I don't want to have an Amazon Echo in the house. I've got a daughter. I don't want this in the house listening to my every word. And I said, have you got a smartphone? He's like, yeah. I like, just bought a new smart TV. I'm like, yeah, that's got a mic in it as well. It's like, you know, the technology's already... We've already got it in our homes, in our hands. If you've got a smartphone or you've got, you know, a smart TV or, I mean, what was it? I don't remember the one that got me was the smart kettle that apparently was it was basically just a wormhole into your router. Yeah. It was a smart kettle and it had some security issue where if you had left the kettle on all the time, because it's smart, it connects to your internet, right? But you could actually hack into your person's, that person's network via the kettle
and make them more cups of coffee.
Yes.
That sounds fine by me.
So when the steam comes out and it makes that whistling sound, is that a warning that you've been compromised?
That's your data leak.
Yeah, it's your data leak. There you go. Well done, Stephen.
I'll tell you what is an eye opener for how much your smartphones and stuff are tracking you. I think there's an equivalent on Android, but I don't know where it is. But I know on iOS, if you go into settings, privacy, location, and then somewhere in there, there's a thing called significant locations, which is on by default.
Oh.
And that has a list of pretty much everywhere that you've been. And it's basically the database that Apple Maps uses to provide, you know, like Siri predictions. You might have seen these where it kind of says, oh, we think you want to go to this place, or you regularly do this commute at this time. Do you want to get your directions up? And it's fascinating how much info that's got about you.
Didn't you have the same, Andy, on your phone where Google it was able to track your everyday sort of journeys?
Yeah, by default. Yeah, so it's built into Google Maps, I believe, or it's some kind of Google or around that. But it can trace me based on, you know, walking to work or walking back from work, or going to the gym or whatever. It would map where I was at certain locations. And then at the end of the month, they would send you, oh, you've been to this city twice, or you've spent this amount of time going to Sainsbury's and getting your shopping. Obviously, over the last 12 months, it hasn't really mattered because I haven't really gone anywhere. But I think I remember explaining to you, Stephen, you were like, they do that. They do that. You've got to give them permission to do that. Nope, it's set on by default. So,
yeah,
you can go in and turn it off, but...
Google collecting data about people? Mm. No.
I know. We live in endless... amazement at how these companies do this stuff, and yet it's all there. It's not like they're hiding it. And you know, I think that's the interesting thing, you know, especially when we talk about Facebook. I used to get really surprised at friends of mine and neighbors of mine who, you know, have young kids, and they'd put pictures up of their kids, and you know, some kid, I mean, I remember one night there was a picture had gone up and the kid was in the bath, and I just thought, that's a bit, you know, should you really be putting that on Facebook? You know, that doesn't feel right, you know. And she's like, it's okay, it's fine, you know, it's only my friends that see it. And I said, well, look at it this way. I said, you know, this is a social network. I said, and if somebody likes that picture, and say I like that picture, that means all my friends see that picture. And the circle just gets wider and wider. And if somebody else likes the picture, then their friends will see it. And suddenly, I said, the way to describe it, I said, was imagine sitting on a bus and someone, you know, who you don't know, comes and sits beside you and says, hey, I thought that was a lovely picture of your daughter. You would be horrified. But that's social media. That is essentially social media.
You can go and lock a lot of that down in the settings, but people just don't.
I tell people all the time.
I've gone through there so carefully to say what people can see, what they can't see. I have a list that keeps separate, because I'll hear celebrities or people say, oh, well, my Facebook's only for my friends and anybody, you know, who listens to my show or this or that or whatever. I do a special whatever. No, there's a way you can do a separate list where, you know, you only have these, you know, people can only see what you put in public. They can't see your private things that you share. And you can lock that down to say only my friends and not their friends. So, you know, what you were saying can't happen or won't happen. but people never think to go in and do that, or just don't take the time to say, okay, what privacy settings are there and what can I turn off, or what do I want to keep on? But, you know, you've really got to be aware of what is available to you.
But what came up to me in that social media or social dilemma documentary was that there's that side of it, which is the stuff we can control, but we don't, because we don't pay enough attention. So people will always say the same thing. They'll always say, oh, I didn't know such a setting existed. And it's like, yeah, but if you just go into the settings, you'll see them and you can figure it out. I mean, it's really, in some ways, very simply labelled. However, there's the other side of the coin, which is the data that you don't think about that they're taking. I mean, one that really got me was, and I, you know, we know why they're doing this. They're doing this for advertising purposes, but they calculate how long you stare at a picture on Facebook. So if you scroll past an image, they start a timer every time. I don't know if it's just on Facebook, maybe on Twitter as well. But they actually capture how long you stay on that image. And that then determines how they'll deliver content to you going forward. And this is data we didn't... You kind of feel, well, I'm not in control of that. I'm not in control of any of that. And it does make you wonder. I mean, and I've said this before. They didn't reference it in the program, interestingly. I've often said, this is a complete conspiracy theory, but I've often thought, it is weird sometimes when I mention something and I've never searched for online and suddenly an ad pops up on my phone for it.
Ah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, what's that about? You know, is it capturing the words I'm saying as well? And when you add everything else up, it doesn't feel so much like a conspiracy theory, does it? It almost feels like, well, it almost feels obvious. It's almost like you're waiting for the head of Google or head of whatever, Facebook, to say, oh, yeah, of course we do that.
Well, it's like taking that the step forward. Do you say, well, you look for something or search for something or whatever, and all of a sudden you've got an ad for it. How many times, how many times have any of us been having a conversation with someone and then we go into YouTube or Facebook and you weren't even on your phone? That happens to me with YouTube all the time, the suggested videos at the, you know, the home screen. My wife and I'll be having a conversation about an old movie or an actor or something like that. And then the next day or two, I'll look in the suggested list and there's like, you know, top five things that this movie actor was in, or things you didn't know about this movie. And it was one we just spoke about that I've never searched anything about. Or we'll talk about something that we saw on TV or a commercial on TV or whatever. And then the next day it shows up as an ad in Facebook. It's a conspiracy, but then again, it happens so often, I start to wonder.
It's happened to me recently as well. Anyone who's listening last week would have heard my boiler issues at the heating. So I've started to see adverts appear on Facebook.
So boring.
Boiler insurance. I've never searched for that. I don't need boiler insurance. Why am I getting adverts? But I have spoke about it in a room. About boilers breaking, so yeah, it's a head scratcher, a bit of an eye opener.
Okay, we've freaked everyone out.
But it's important people know this stuff. Callum, you were going to say something earlier, and I cut you off.
I think the privacy stuff, I think it's so buried away as well. Realistically, I know there's a button on your home screen on Facebook for like settings and privacy. But then you go in there and there's so many different options. I don't think people have the time, especially people who are not that techie, especially people who are just using it casually.
I don't buy that. I'll tell you why I don't buy it. I remember back getting my first video recorder and there was a manual that was about 9,000 pages long. And it had, you know, the most complicated setup process ever known to man. I struggle with an alarm clock. Remember the old alarm clocks? trying to work out how you got an alarm to set on that thing made no sense. And the instructions...
Got to hold one button, to click another button, to set the time. And then that was just the hour. Now you got to do something different for the
and
minute.
And is that the hours for the time? Or is that the hours for the clock?
For the alarm.
Or the alarm?
For the alarm.
Like,
right.
Oh, what? So, you know, for that reason, I think, yeah, I get it that, you know, there's a lot in there. But we're not suggesting that, you know, someone builds a nuclear reactor with this thing. It's just, you know, it's just a couple of options, surely. No, I mean, you tell me.
Well, I mean, just what you were describing before about, you know, just liking something and who that's going to be seen by. And, you know, when you post something, it's very complicated. It's nuanced, I would say. And they have been accused in the past, I don't know if they still do it, of purposefully obfuscating certain settings so that, you know, that they don't want people to turn off. I think it's really important, just generally speaking, to use... a browser that has active cookie tracking blocking. And that's something simple that you can do. Just go to any web page that you happen to be on in Safari on your phone, on your iPhone, for example. Tap on the format button at the very top and tap on privacy. And there you'll get a report of the 51 tracking cookies that have been blocked by Safari on any given web page. You know, it's really quite scary. But those are, you know, that's something simple and, you know, you don't need to worry about it. Once you've got those turned on, which on Apple products they are by default, you know, but potentially think twice before you put Chrome on your iPhone as your default browser for that reason.
Sacrilege. But
yeah. So, you know, and obviously there are things that you can add on to Chrome on your desktop, for example, but it's not quite as straightforward.
Edge, if you've got something edge, that's edge.
Yeah,
here come
exactly.
The emails. He spoke positively about an Apple product and then immediately trashed the Google product.
Oh,
here they come.
That's the next four
Andy,
weeks
you're going to get flooded. Yeah.
Well, that's Google's business case, isn't it? So, you know, who can blame them?
Yeah.
You've got to make money somehow.
Well, look, put it this way. If it wasn't for social media, I wouldn't have bought myself a Shelby the Llama last week, my new cuddle pillow, which I was so pleased about. You're laughing, but you'll Google it later. I bet you.
Oh, you know
bet
I will.
You, bet you, bet you. Right, shall we get some emails? Because I feel that I don't want to miss on all the emails that we've got. We'll get plenty of them. Let's get into the emails. We have to do this first, Callum.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Bing here's bong. Your mail today.
Bing bong, bing bong, bing bong, bing bong. Right, okay. Andy.
Yes.
Can you tell I was off last week? You didn't get a lot of prep time this week for this week's programme. So,
well,
you
it's
know.
About time we got into the emails,
yeah,
isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
It's only halfway
okay,
in.
We're going to start. Yeah, halfway in. Hi, team, says Will. I just wanted to share a thought with you about the M1-based Mac laptops. Battery life that truly lasts all day is nice, but since I keep mine plugged in most of the time, apart from a couple of hours on the train or in a coffee shop, I care more about performance than battery life. Having a battery last all day might be good if I couldn't get a seat by a plug, but I nearly always can, and when I can't, my battery will typically last as long as I need it to. I really don't understand why all day battery life is touted as a feature of the M1 chip. One request I would have is for Stephen, who I know has both, to do a side-by-side comparison of the M1 and the Intel-based Macs. It'd be interesting to see how they compare in terms of performance, as I still believe that the Intel would be better if you really need high performance. Regards, that's from Will.
Well, I can give you an answer to that one, Will. Sell the Intel immediately. Go M1 all the way, except, with one caveat, except if you want to run Windows on it, because they still haven't brought out any support for Windows yet. There is, I was reading today, actually, there's an update to Parallels coming. There's a preview. Mm-hmm. Parallels is not very accessible, from my understanding. It's not as accessible, certainly, as VMware, if you want to put Windows on your Mac. But there's a preview version of, I think it's 16 or 17, and that will be M1 compatible once it's properly released out of beta. On the Windows side, you can't put Windows on a Mac at the moment that's got M1 because it's not built for it, but there is a version of Windows, of course, which runs on the Surface Pro X machines that is ARM compatible, or based, actually. But the only issue there is you can only run Windows apps from the App Store. You can't just install. So, for example, JAWS, which you know some of us might want to install, or NVDA, you can't install that on an ARM-based Windows machine because it's not compatible with ARM. So it's not available essentially through the Windows Store. So that's a problem. But you know, if you're not interested in putting Windows on, is an M1 Mac a good choice? Truthfully, I think it is. Yes, batteries. Important, and it is important. It may not be important to you specifically, but it is important to a lot of people, especially those in the move who are creatives who are using it that way. I'm amazed at the battery life. I have to say, I have not charged this machine for about, I mean, I don't use it every day all the time, but when I'm using it, I tend to be sort of sitting in the kitchen, taking some notes, maybe on some Zoom calls, catching up with people, maybe a light bit of editing, and it's doing me about a week. you know, without having to put it in, on charge. It just doesn't die. It just does not die. That'll change through time, I'm sure. But at the moment, it's doing pretty well. In terms of performance, obviously, we always look at this a little bit differently, don't we? Because we look at it based on screen reader performance. That's the key for us. We're not really... Yes, the overall specs are important, but how does that translate to the screen reader? So here's an interesting thing. Over the last week, I've got my Intel Mac, which is my MacBook Pro 15. It's a 2019 model, and it's very high spec. It's an i9 processor. It's got 32 gig of RAM in it. It's got a 1 terabyte hard drive, best graphics card. And the setup process I went through using VoiceOver, it was fine and it was okay. I didn't really think too much of it until I did exactly the same thing. I refreshed the M1 Mac just for a laugh to see what the difference would be in terms of experience. And I zipped through it. VoiceOver felt far more reliant and far more there. It was far more present. No such thing as a Safari busy. Just doesn't exist. You don't get that hassle anymore of the slowdown. It is an incredibly fast machine. And I have to say, I think this is... It excites me and annoys me in equal measure. Because what happened was I spent a ridiculous amount of money on that MacBook Pro. And when I compare it to the base model of the Mac Mini I've got and the MacBook Pro, it just blows it out of the water. My Mac Mini, which was £699, and I'm not ashamed to say, my MacBook Pro, which cost me £3,500, the Mac Mini's better. And that blows me away. It blows me away in every way that I can edit, I can do video, I can do audio, I can do 4K video editing without a hitch. Using VoiceOver, there's no dropped frames, nothing. On the Mac, the fans are screaming, the heat is just incredible. On the MacBook Pro side, it's incredible as well. You don't even, it's almost as if it's just walking along going, and it's not even caring.
That's all you've got? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is the M1.
And that's the M1. Yeah, exactly. That's the M1. Whereas the MacBook Pro Intel, it's like it's trying to pull itself up a hill by its, you know, its teeth.
Wow.
It's just
by all
amazing.
Accounts, the M2 is going to be strides ahead.
It feels like, it felt like I fell asleep in 2020 and I woke up in 2040. That's the difference. It's like 20 years of processor speed simply because of that jump. I cannot believe that I would recommend to someone, anybody, the base model Mac Mini. You don't need a MacBook Pro. Don't need a MacBook Air. If you're blind and you're going to be home-based, get a Mac Mini. That's what you've got, Robin. Brilliant machine. This is an amazing machine. For $699, the base model is all you need. I guarantee it. Unless you want more hard drive space, fair enough. And a lot of people said, oh, should I get 16 gig versus 8 gig? I opted for the 8 gig just because I wanted to try it. Honestly, there is nothing I have not run. The best day of my life... Someone suggested it on YouTube. Apart from my wedding, obviously. But the most fun thing that happened was when I got my Mac Mini, set it up, got it all set up and running. I put Final Cut on it. It wasn't the M1 version at that point, so it hadn't been upgraded for that or updated for that. I put it on, I put on Office, I put on all these applications. And then I went into the applications folder. I did Command A, select all. And Command O, which is open. And I opened every single application and I timed how long it would take for every application to open and for VoiceOver to be ready to use on one of those applications. It took 32 seconds to open the best part of about 25 applications, including big, beefy applications like Final Cut Pro, like all the Office applications, and I mean all of them. It did all of that in about 30 seconds and it was VoiceOver ready. I tried it on the MacBook Pro with Intel, and it was about, well, it actually took, if we're talking VoiceOver ready, it took about 5 or 6 minutes because I had to actually close some apps down on a machine with 32 gig of RAM in it. It couldn't handle it in an i9 processor. So, you know, I'm not saying it's the end of Intel, not at all. I think Intel will do its best to catch up, but talk about out of the gate in 2020 with this one. That was an amazing change, and it is only going to get better from there. The next stage is going to be improved graphics performance. That's where it will really improve. In terms of processor performance, I really don't know what else I need. So I hope that answers your question, Will. I was blown away, and I love the fact that I can use a MacBook Pro without burning my hands off, because every time I used to use it, it was so warm. Now that's not a problem. So have I stunned you to silence? I've stunned you all to silence.
I don't know what to make of that. That's amazing. It takes me 30 seconds just to open up my email sometimes.
Yeah.
When I'm having to, you know, travel with work, battery life is all important. So yeah, definitely for some people that is a big seller. Also, because I have a VM on there as well, I'm basically running two operating systems. I love doing that. I'm willing to make the compromise, but that does basically halve your battery life as well. So yeah, all day battery life for me, when I finally get one with a VM, which I will need, if I can get an all day battery life out of that setup, that'd be fab. That'd be great.
Amazing. Right, Andy, let's get into another email.
Hi, guys, says Graham. Listening to various podcasts, I regularly hear Mac users complain of the busy issue that they experience when using VoiceOver with Safari. A few weeks ago, I installed Edge on my MacBook Pro 13-inch 2014, and what a difference. Not once have I had the busy problem. FYI, my MacBook is running OS X and is using an Mojave, of course, the desert, yes, sorry, and using the i7 processor with 16 gig of RAM. So it's still quite a powerful machine, even though I still think Edge could be the answer for most Mac users with less specced machines, judging from my own experience. I thought I'd let you know, as you guys can pass this information to a much wider audience than I can. Keep up the great work and try and find a place for Sean on the show. He adds such a lot. Warm regards, Graham.
Well, he was on the show last week, and what do you think he added something? I'm
he ditched
different
him
show, wasn't it?
Yes.
Sorry, Sean.
Poor Sean.
Yeah, do you know, Edge is coming up a lot in my inbox. I got an email actually on my own from Kawal Gukakoglu, who got in touch and saying after hearing Tech Talk recently, she had tried to download Edge for the Mac as she had it on her iPhone, and she loves it on her Microsoft tablet. I guess the Surface you must have. So she wanted it on her Mac. But she's been having issues. She couldn't. She tried to download it from the Microsoft website, but it wouldn't let her. And that's interesting because I had issues as well. When I was trying to download it on the website, I just couldn't seem to get to the bit where the link was to download it. I couldn't really figure out what was going on. And that was using Safari on the Mac. So maybe there's an issue with the website. I don't know have you guys had problems there?
Well, I don't use a Mac, so I didn't have any problem with it on my PC with Windows, so there was no problem, and I've been praising it for months, so yeah, no problems here, but Robin?
I had to download Google Chrome for the other day, and I had no problems there, but obviously that's a different website, but yeah, I haven't used Edge on the Mac side, because if I'm doing testing for a client, then they specify what browser they want me to try, but yeah,
okay.
I mean, it's the same engine, so it's unfortunate if it's not able to be easily downloaded. Definitely don't go to other sites purporting to download.
Well, that's the other problem, isn't it? You can so easily end up in the wrong place with it. She says, also, I've been trying to install VMware Fusion on the Mac recently, but that isn't working for me. I've got a mid-2020 Intel Mac. Anything changes? No, there was an update to VMware, wasn't there? Is it still called Fusion? Did they change it?
Yeah, no,
I gave up on
Fusion.
It when I won M1, but
If she's on Catalina, then that's 11.5. If she's upgraded to Big Sur, then that should be 12. So you'll have to fork out for the upgrade. It might be that, I don't know, if you can't even download it and install it, because obviously it works free for a bit. I don't know is the answer. It should be fine. I'm running it right now.
Interesting. But, you know, the Edge, it's certainly good to know that the Edge is good. I do really like Edge. It's the only app that I found that on the Mac side anyway, it's the only browser I found that doesn't continually throw me back out of the app, the actual content window,
and into
all the other components. You end up in bookmarks all of a sudden, or you're at the back button and you're like, why, how did I end up here? It's like trying to wrestle an octopus to get online. It's ridiculous. Never done it, but I can only imagine. If any octopuses are listening, octopi? Come on, Robin, you're schooled in English.
Vision of this internet cafe where you're trying to wrestle an octopus to get to the only left computer that is available.
They do say radio's theatre of the mind, don't they? Okay, let's get another email.
Just finishing the show notes there. Wrestling octopuses. There we go.
That'll be in the title.
Yes. Email from Nadia. Hi, guys. Now, I thought I'd get in on the phone debate. So this is going back a couple of weeks when we were doing the old Android versus iOS discussion. I'm amazed that no one has mentioned Synaptic. It completely disproves what the man from TFL was saying about people with no vision being better off with Apple. Synaptic is on Samsung Galaxy phones and tablets, and it makes your phones completely accessible and there are no gestures required. You simply slide your finger down the screen until you hear what you're looking for and then take your finger away to select it. Even better, they now have a software called Synaptic Reader, which allows the user to access third-party apps without needing to use TalkBack. Best of all, you only pay the price for an Android phone, nothing extra. The software is included, and they often have offers. It does allow you to adjust things like color, text size, etc. How many other specialist technology companies let you buy their products for the same price a sighted person would spend on a mainstream phone? I don't know why everyone doesn't use them. Okay. I'm biased. I lean more towards specific technology rather than mainstream. Nadia also goes on to say, incidentally, I know you emailed, she emailed back saying about Audible Sync, and I was trying to listen to books on my phone while I gave up and I returned to the stream. Yes, copying books on it is time consuming, but that really is the only drawback. At least you won't receive an email, an update, and it becomes unusable. I'm talking to you, Audible. And now for, she goes on to say, Audible Sync works with Jaws and the Victor Reader Stream. For me, accessible technology wins. That's from Nadia.
Yeah, and quite right
Interesting.
Too.
Interesting.
You tried that, Callum? You've been into Synaptic?
Yeah, I mean, I'm Synaptic, it doesn't sound like something that's really for me, to be honest. I'm quite happy with Apple, and when I do use Android, it's either on my Braille Note, which is very heavily customised anyway, or it's on my work phone, which I'm restricted in what I can do with it. But I mean, it does sound, it's an interesting point with Android that if you're not a fan of, I guess the one thing with Apple is if you're not a fan of VoiceOver, you're stuck with it. Whereas with Android, developers have a lot more flexibility to do this sort of thing and to build these customized interfaces. I didn't realize that Synaptic just charge you the same price as a sighted person. That is really nice.
Well, I think in terms of comparison, in terms of price comparison, I don't know what you would compare it to, because of course there are so many different devices in the market, right? So I guess the price is probably in line. I think that's maybe the way to say it, that it's in line with other Android phones of similar quality and style and all the rest. Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that it exists. I think it's important that it exists, because not everybody wants to use the Apple ecosystem or the Android ecosystem in the way it is. However, one thing I will say about Synaptic, I mean, I think it's brilliant. I've used it. I think it's excellent. I think it's a very responsive. It's probably the best experience I've had with an Android phone, to be honest. It's just really easy to use. And if I wasn't someone who needed access to all these different types of apps, then I might not... I may be considered to use it, but actually that's kind of the point and the problem in some ways for me, because you have a system where if you go to an app, and I've not used it for a while, so I'm not going to start naming apps, but let's just say a banking app, right, that you maybe use or you want to use. Synaptic will not wrap that app into its own style. You'll be sent out of Synaptic to go into that app. And for me, that was the problem, because then I was essentially by default having to use Android's TalkBack that at that stage I had never used, really. I'd never really touched it. It wasn't something I'd ever gone near. So I think for a general user, for somebody who has got really used to this nice little walled garden that they're in, to be thrown out of that and into an app and into a world they don't really understand, that's quite worrying for me. So that was the only issue I had. You do feel that it's a great system if you only live in that walled garden. And if you're happy in that, brilliant. But if you want to venture out of it, you need to be prepared to learn some things. And that
Nadia
would be my
was
only
saying
issue.
That there's this new Synaptic Reader, which seems to be a replacement for TalkBack. And maybe it gives you a bit more harmony with the synaptic walled garden experience with the gestures that it uses or the paradigm for accessing the screen, even when you're out and about in your Uber app or your banking app or whatever it might be. But still, I think you're right. You know, this product is really first and foremost for people that like a really, you know, simple, controlled, distilled environment where you're not having to, you know, there's not such a massive learning curve. So there's definitely an audience for this, you know, customized version of Android or this kind of product, which is a little sweet within itself. It's a bit like Dolphin's Guide Connect, which has now got video calling.
Yes.
And it's looking like a really nice, you know, suite of software. And for someone like my mum, who's let her version of Jaws lapse a very long time ago and keeps forgetting keystrokes anyway, you know, I'm thinking Guide Connect as a way to kind of revitalize her PC usage. And so, yeah, this might be a similar scenario on a mobile phone for a lot of people.
I've never, I mean, since I was at school, I used Supernova, and that was the only time I ever used it. And we've discussed the reasons behind that before. But I think, you know, I've been in touch with Dolphin and I've said, look, guys, I want to talk about this because I really feel it's an area we don't discuss a lot of. People have picked up on it before. I'm well aware of that. So I've asked them to send me a copy of the program to actually try it and get to know Guide Connect, because I think it's a very interesting thing. You know, it depends, because, you know, I often think about, yeah, I know people in my life who could really benefit from something like Guide Connect, because there's a leisure aspect to it as well. It's not, you know, it almost, there's something quite nice about not sitting in front of Windows 10, you know, the operating system, especially if you work all day. You kind of want to get away from it. For some people, it just reminds them of being in the office, you know, or, you know, it's just over the top for what you need at home. Whereas Guide Connect, you know, you can listen to radio, you can watch, you know, programs, you can, you know, send an email, you can take some notes. There's lots of fun things you can do. It's more of a leisure. It makes your computer more of a leisure product, I think, and makes that more inviting to use. Plus, it's all fully accessible, so you don't have any worries around that. And it's the same as Synaptic. It's the same thing. I'm just intrigued by this. Again, you know, we are all users of what I would say mainstream tech, with the occasional exception. Like, for example, I've got my Braille Note, well, not my Braille Note, my Focus 14 Braille display, and you've got your Braille Note Touch, and, you know, we have all these different things, and Robin has a Braille display covered in tea, for some reason, only unbeknownst to himself. So, you know, that's it. We all have elements of it, as much as, and I don't think we do decry it, but as much as we look for as mainstream solutions is perhaps the way to look at it. You know, I want to carry one device in my pocket, not 15. But at the same token, there are things I really like. Like, I mean, I was talking today just about dictaphones and how much I love my dictaphone. And that's quite old tech now, you know. That's quite old tech, the idea of having something like that. It's like, you know, walking around in the 80s, you know, taking notes and all that nonsense. But that's what I like to do, because it's the quickest and easiest way for me, for example, to take down a phone number or an email address, you know. Anyway, look, we're out of time, but we'll get to more emails next week, and we will, you know, I promise you, I will be in full form next week. Although, in fairness, I think we had a good time at Respective. I've enjoyed today. And Callum, it's been lovely to meet you as well. The Stone Man will return, I'm sure. So thank you for bringing us your thoughts this week. To Tim and Robin, of course, and to Emails Andy, thank you, guys. We'll catch you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Thank you.